Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is KNX In Depth. I'm Rob Archer.
I'm Charles Feldman. Thousands of Kaiser health workers in California and elsewhere on strike. We go in depth into whether those in the healthcare field should have the legal right to walk off the job.
And welcome back, Charles.
Thank you.
So what do the conservative Republicans in the House want exactly? They kicked out Kevin McCarthy. We're going to go in depth into what's possibly next for them. And more kids are now getting a disease associated with alcoholics.
Yes, but they're not drinking, the kids, which is good.
Right.
Yeah.
It's bad that they have the disease,
but at least they're not drinking, too. We start, though, with the Kaiser healthcare workers strike. Jerry Cutler is a labor relations expert with Columbia University. He's also, by the way, the lead author of The Legal Guide to Human Resources. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So here's the situation, right? You know, years ago, you'd go to your doctor, family doctor. It was a small concern normally. They worked for they were their own business. No one went on strike because usually it was the family members who helped out the doctor. Now you've got these big conglomerates that own hospitals that increasingly buy up even private medical practices. It's big business, American medicine. It's important business to people who need health care, which raises the question, is it so important that perhaps it shouldn't be legal for health care workers to walk off the job?
Well, I think we have to take a step back and look at the impact that strikes have on workers, right? They're not receiving a paycheck. They can't pay their bills. They can't pay for food, rent, mortgages. They're also not eligible for unemployment benefits in most states. So the decision to go on strike is not one that's made lightly by workers. And it's typically because the employer has taken a position in bargaining that's so intolerable that workers feel they have no choice but to exercise the economic power that they have, which is withholding their services. So, it certainly can have an effect on patients. But if we're looking at the current strike at Kaiser, it's not impacting the entire healthcare industry, right? It's confined to the hospitals and medical offices that are part of Kaiser.
Yes, but if you're in Kaiser, it's like an HMO, right? So you're stuck dealing with the Kaiser universe. So if they're out, we had sound bites on our air this morning with people who can't get chemotherapy, who can't get very important medical tests done. Granted, it's a 3-day strike only, but 3 days can be an eternity if somebody is seriously ill. So it does seem as if that there needs to be some sort of balance here.
Well, Congress has attempted to strike that balance when it enacted the National Labor Relations Act, which gives private sector workers the right to strike, even those private sector workers in industries that have a significant impact on members of the public. I would like to think, and we know this, I think, from the reporting, that at the Kaiser hospitals and medical offices that are affected, it's not all services they provide. Doctors are not on strike at Kaiser. ER nurses are not on strike. So patients can still avail themselves of emergent care and other critical care needs at those Kaiser facilities. And there are also Kaiser facilities outside those jurisdictions that are not impacted by the strike.
Very quickly before we run out, those who argue that maybe healthcare workers, or at least some of them, should not have the legal right to go on strike and manage to get kind of a law passed about that, that wouldn't really work unless the government can make an argument that it's got to nationalize healthcare, because healthcare is private for-profit business in the United States.
Well, that's true. And that's one area where it's different from groups of workers like air traffic controllers, who don't have the right to strike under the law because they're federal government employees. But I would submit to you that even if this group of employees was carved out from having the legal right to strike, it doesn't mean there won't be strikes. In the U.S., if you go back 100 years or more, before workers had the legal right to strike, there were many strikes in critical industries affecting people, affecting safety and well-being, in manufacturing and transportation. So removing the right to strike doesn't mean that workers will not withhold their services. Again, if they're being treated in a way that they believe is unfair or unreasonable, I would suggest a better approach than looking at the remedies that workers can avail themselves of is look at the causes. Why do workers feel they're in a situation where they're willing to go without pay for a period of time? I would suggest to you that in my review of strikes over the years, that only happens when the situation is so critical from the perspective of employees that they feel they have no choice.
Right.
Go on strike.
All right. Jerry Cutler, thank you. Labor relations expert with Columbia University.
Right now, though, House Republicans have to come together to pick a new speaker after Kevin McCarthy was voted out yesterday. He was the second consecutive speaker from California, taking over for Nancy Pelosi, of course. David McEwen is a political analyst and political science professor at Sonoma State University. David, thanks for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you both. Thank you very much for having me.
So let me ask you, I know all those years back when Tip O'Neill, for example, was Speaker of the House, there were a lot of benefits for the state of Massachusetts, or at least they think there were, because he happened to be not only a representative, but Speaker of the House. I suspect that there were benefits to the state of California when the Speaker of the House was first Pelosi and then McCarthy. If that's an accurate assessment, what happens to the state when the next speaker presumably will not be from California?
Yeah, it seems a big leap of faith that we would see the next speaker of the House to be from California. And then you have to kind of look at, to the point of your question, well, what's the impact to California? Earmarks have changed. The earmark process has changed. We have had some return of those. And there is this idea that members of Congress do bring the pork back to their home districts. But California's importance still is there. It's just behind the leadership, right? Nancy Pelosi is still around. Her leadership folks, her kind of kitchen cabinet, if you will, are still hugely important. So while we might not bring back as much cash, if you want to think of it that way, there are still going to be elements of important projects that will matter and that California will be front and center in those discussions. They may just not be as prominent as they were or for a long period of time. But nonetheless, the next leader of the House in 2024 and what that looks like, for example, if Democrats were to retake the House in 2024, the road to that is going to be through California. So the Golden State still matters in many, many different ways.
So what did California get as far as, you know, benefits, extra gotchas, having Kevin McCarthy in that office while he was there, or Nancy Pelosi? What did we get out of that?
Yeah, if we look at the recent past, and certainly your listeners will know this, if you travel on any highway, it's a combination of transportation spending that happens at the local, state, and federal level. Usually federal dollars drive that. Water projects certainly related to that. And all of the changes that have occurred relative to kind of carbon capture and what's going on with the air, those are all have federal dollars attached to them. There are some court cases that could change some of this kind of mix of dollars. But in the recent past, it has been helpful for California around, say, quality of life resource issues, transportation, air, and water, in terms of bringing some combination of dollars together with what's happening at the local and state level in terms of funding those. A lot of that has been driven, though, by California's massive economy and the economic engine that's been going on. So if California were to get a cold and you had this change of leadership, it would matter in that kind of sickly condition that California could experience some kind of malaise or trouble in terms of bringing those dollars back. So it's not critical in terms of that leadership, but it is important, say a necessary but not sufficient condition, if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah, you sort of touched on where I was about to go with this, which is to sort of reverse the equation for the second. You know, a lot of states, it's no secret, they hate California. So they do. I mean, they can't stand us. So let's presume, for the sake of argument, the next Speaker of the House is from a state that hates California, like, I don't know, Texas. Could that Speaker of the House, whoever he or she might end up being, thwart things that California would like to have simply as a vendetta against the state of California?
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen that. That's a great point and rather astute, because, look, we did have during the Trump administration a change in taxes related to what's called SALT. Kind of a limit on state and local taxes and what you could write off personally for your income. That change in the SALT, in the SALT, the state and local taxation limit, affected particularly blue states, Democratic states, where there might be local and state taxes that might be higher than the norm. So that meant you couldn't write off as much on your personal income taxes or your personal income, and you had to pay more, if you will, in additional federal taxes, even with the tax cuts that were passed. That affected New York, that affected California, that affected Illinois, those blue states, as a way to kind of assault and go back. So that is something to pay attention to, because if there is an economic hiccup or some change and you have some type of limitation that persists, that could affect people's spending power. In addition, you've also seen, as we all know, an increase in gas taxes and what that looks like. So the pocketbook also will matter for next year, despite what we see going on here and kind of the chaos caucus for Republicans in the last 24 to 72 hours.
All right, David McEwen, thank you so much. Political analyst, political science professor at Sonoma State University.
You know, he took the words right out of my mouth, the chaos caucus.
Yes, the chaos caucus.
Chaos caucus. Because when we come back, we're going to talk about this so-called chaos caucus. And what exactly do they want?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to Washington, D.C., the House without a speaker. Brian Darling is a Republican strategist and former Senate aide to Kentucky's Rand Paul. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So our last guest called it the Chaos Caucus. Is that all they want, just chaos?
Well, it seems like there is a lot of chaos in the Chaos Caucus. But, you know, ultimately, this was something that was pushed by Congressman Matt Gaetz from Florida. He only needed 11 Republicans, even less, to join him to depose the speaker. And it has caused chaos in the House. But ultimately, I think Republicans have a week to get their act together, figure out who they're going to roll in behind, nominate that potential speaker, and get back on track.
But even for somebody like the esteemed congressperson whose name you just mentioned, even if he wants chaos, for what purpose?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he had a personal problem with the speaker. And ultimately, I mean, he did have enough support to depose the speaker. It's interesting when you look at the way this played out. One thing that I thought was fascinating was the fact that all Democrats voted to depose the speaker. And this is a tool that could be used by Republicans in the future if they want to, if they lose power. And then you have Hakeem Jeffries, who's the most likely Democratic speaker in the next Congress. If somehow Republicans lose the House, Republicans can do a motion to vacate over and over again and harass that leadership because of what they did in this under these circumstances. So I was surprised by that. But, you know, it didn't take many to depose this speaker. And hopefully the next speaker, whomever that turns out to be, will have just enough support so they can't be deposed in the same way.
And they might also change the rules that allowed this to happen, too, because this was the deal that McCarthy made. He basically gave them all the weapons and all the bullets and said, you can use it whenever you want, just one of you. And now I guess you can't be surprised that they took him up on that.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Kevin McCarthy reinstated. It's something that Nancy Pelosi had suspended and changed the rules so that she couldn't be deposed the same way. But I presume that whatever happens going forward, the whole idea of a motion to vacate being brought up by one member will probably be pushed aside. I mean, when you look at how hard it is to pass legislation, how hard it is to even get a speaking role, just to get the floor to speak, yet it's so easy to make a motion to depose a speaker. It doesn't really make much procedural sense to allow that to happen so easily. I mean, it really defies kind of common sense when you look at the rules as a whole and how easy it was for this to happen.
Let me ask you something. I mean, Newt Gingrich came into to really being because of the Tea Party movement, right? Is this Chaos Caucus a movement? Is it an actual movement? And if so, where is it moving?
Well, I mean, I think that there is a lot of validity to what happened. I mean, you have the American people looking at Congress, and you look at the polling numbers for both parties. The American people don't like Republicans. They don't like Democrats. They don't like either party. They don't like Congress. And it's because Congress is spending way too much money. Both parties have let down the American people. And so this whole idea of chaos, you have a handful of members saying, look, we need to stop spending so much. Maybe this chaos will lead to something good. Maybe it will lead to Congress actually doing something, you know, on border security, doing something about inflation, addressing issues that the American people care about, and getting spending under control, which is the most important. I mean, Congress is looking at a $2 billion debt this year alone.
So you're actually suggesting that this could be a revolutionary thing, that Congress could actually be made to, I don't know, do something?
Well, I mean, the next speaker is going to be looking over his shoulder and knowing that if he does cut deals that are too far away from what Republicans want, then that speaker will be looking for a job, too. And so, you know, you have this downward pressure now all of a sudden. You have Speaker McCarthy being made an example of because conservatives didn't like his debt limit deal and they didn't like the direction negotiations were going on appropriations for next year. They want to see more cuts to spending, and we're going to see that as a result of this effort by Matt Gaetz.
Brian Darling, thank you. Republican strategist, former Senate aide to Kentucky's Rand Paul.
You're listening to KNX In Depth, along with Rob Archer. I'm Charles Feldman.
More and more kids today are developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Yeah, researchers in the journal Clinical Liver Disease find it's about as common now as asthma, impacting 5 to 10% of kids in the country. Dr. Jeffrey Schwimmer is with UC San Diego. He's also the founder and director of the Fatty Liver Clinic at Rady Children's Hospital. That's also in San Diego. Doctor, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
So do these kids, are they getting fatty? First of all, I guess we should define for those who are listening, what exactly is fatty liver disease? And then the question that comes right after that is that because of diet primarily?
So fatty liver disease is when the cells of the liver are inappropriately storing large droplets of fat inside those cells. And some children will have fatty liver where those fat cells are present in the liver cells, those fat droplets. And some children do not tolerate this very well, will have liver cell damage and inflammation and a condition called steatohepatitis. And those children are the ones who are most at risk for serious health consequences. That's quite all right. In terms of what causes this, that's a complex question. So diet, as you suggest, nutrition is certainly an important cause. Genetics play a major role in this. Obesity is a very strong risk factor for fatty liver disease. And in California, about 15% of children have obesity, which means that in the Los Angeles metropolitan area, that's over 1 million children.
And what are some signs that parents should watch out for, they should take to go see their kids, get to the doctor and get checked out for this?
So some children will have symptoms. They tend to be nonspecific. Some will have fatigue or abdominal pain. So certainly not every child with those things has this condition. Because it often can be silent and is so common and serious, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that all children who are 10 and older with obesity should be screened for fatty liver disease, diabetes, and hypertension by seeing their primary care doctor, having their blood pressure measured, and having a blood test done.
Is this an American problem or is it universal?
This has become a global problem. The rates of NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, do vary around the globe, but almost everywhere in the world has seen a large increase in the number of children with this problem.
No, so that goes back then to the question, is it because in the past, I don't know, half a century or so, we all around the world consume so much processed food that it contributes greatly to this? Or is something else happening, maybe at a genetic level, that is causing this?
Ultra-processed foods, one of the things that you mentioned, is definitely an important contributor to this problem. And the amount of ultra-processed foods that we all consume has increased dramatically over the last 30 years. And that is also the time frame in which we have seen a large increase in this disease. Beyond ultra-processed foods alone, there are a number of other factors in our food supply, but certainly the fact that we are eating too much sugar, not enough fiber, not enough real food, all are relevant contributors.
Are you seeing an economic indicator in this? Is it people who maybe don't have a lot of financial resources? Their children are suffering from fatty liver disease more often than kids who come from well-to-do families.
So we started the first fatty liver clinic for children in the United States 21 years ago. And over that time, we've seen people across the entire socioeconomic spectrum. So it's not that anybody is completely protected from this condition, but as your question suggests, yes, children who come from more disadvantaged neighborhoods with all of the complexities around that do carry a higher risk for having fatty liver disease.
Treatments?
treatment is complicated. I think before we talk about treatment, I want to just pivot back to how important it is to make the right diagnosis. So after screening is done, we actually evaluated 8 million patient years across all of Southern California and learned that most children, even after having a positive screening test, don't get a proper diagnostic evaluation done. So it is important that parents really have careful conversation with their child's doctors. In terms of treatment, this is the intersection of everything in the body that has to do with metabolism and inflammation. And so proper nutrition is critical. Exercise on a regular basis is important. Sleep quality and hygiene matters. Stress management matters. All of those things play a role. With respect to medications, there are certain medications that do get used off-label, meaning they're not approved by the FDA for this indication. Those are things that only should be done in concert with an experienced physician. And then increasingly, clinical trials are becoming an option for patients with this disease.
All right. Dr. Jeffrey Schwimmer with UC San Diego talking about kids developing fatty liver disease.
Yeah, there were all kinds. We were talking about this before. All kinds of trends and hashtags out on TikTok. We just saw one. Hashtag beige flag. I don't know who comes up with this stuff. What is it? It's apparently very popular, by the way, beige flag. It has to do with relationships and how, you know, when some people, they just don't care
right.
for something that their partner yeah. is doing, maybe some quirk. The quirk doesn't rise to the level of a red flag,
right.
which would mean it's time to dump the partner and move on.
Right. I think somehow my wife would be involved in that because she yeah. puts up with my quirks. And as far as I know, she hasn't raised it to the level of red flag yet. So maybe we're at beige flag. I don't know. At what point do these trends, though, become harmful? That's the question. Dr. Kelsey Latimer is a clinical psychologist, founder of KML Psychological Services. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So give us an example, because we're talking about when trends become harmful. I definitely want to talk about that. But are there TikTok trends that are not harmful that are, in fact, beneficial?
I think that's an awesome question. And, you know, I think that there's absolutely a positive side to social media. There's no doubt about it. First of all, it's how I got on here today. So I'm really happy about that. And I think it just connects us. So, right. So it gives us an opportunity to be far more connected outside of people or places that we would normally be able to see before there was the internet. So it's had an awesome opportunity for connection and an impact. My clients tell me that they've had excellent experiences on social media. Oftentimes, they've been able to find recovery when they haven't been before. And for those of you that don't know, I'm an addiction and eating disorder specialist. Sure. So I work with people that are seeking recovery, and they may not be able to find it in their local area, but they might be able to find it online. So I think it has pros and it has cons, right. and it really comes down to, you know, how are we using social media?
Right. But here's the thing. Because what I want to do is I want to, for the sake of this discussion, section off TikTok from the rest of social media. Because they're not all the same. Facebook does what it does, and Twitter, now X, does what it does. TikTok has a very special role, it seems, especially for a lot mm-hmm. of kids. They see often a lot of dumb things that are on TikTok because it makes good video. By nature, TikTok is something that demands a person's attention because they're short videos. People do things that are outrageous so that it gets the attention on TikTok. So it's somewhat different than
yes.
sending out a tweet or sending out a like on Facebook. So the question really is not as broad as all social media, which I grant you has many good things, but is there something particularly pernicious, dangerous about mm-hmm. TikTok?
I think there absolutely can be. I'm right on board with you in looking at some of the top challenges, if you will, that are out there, and they're incredibly dangerous. And people are trying things that they wouldn't necessarily try if they didn't see that, you know, on TikTok. So I absolutely think that, you know, it's buyer beware. You have to be aware of what you're looking at. And I think parents also need to be aware, because our generation, you know, I'm a Gen X, We may not know about what's happening out there. And I think we need to be aware of what our kids are exposed to. And funny side note, I was talking to somebody this morning, and this had literally nothing to do with this conversation. It was before we decided to meet up here today. And they were telling me that one of their clients talked to them about TikTok specifically being the new Google of their generation. If they want to buy a blanket, they go to TikTok. They go to these different places. So we need to be aware that that may be the main kind of mode of information that's getting out to some people, not all people, but some young people.
All right. Final question, because we are running out of time. And that brings me to my point. TikTok is built around very quick videos, right? And so with all these trends and everything, especially younger people are maybe finding out things about the world through TikTok, but they're not going very deep because there's no time to go deep. It's very quick. So is that a danger to young minds? And can you give us a short attention span answer?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm already bored. Sorry.
Yep, there you go. I think for sure, yes, there is absolutely a challenge with that. We need to be able to go deeper. So, you know, I think that is definitely a problem with today's day and age. I see it all the time in my teaching and in my counseling, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Dr. Kelsey Latimer, clinical psychologist, founder of KML Psychological Services. So did this convince you, Charles, to get on TikTok?
Oh, no, I've already moved on.
You forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing. That's it for KDX In Depth today. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, welcome back, Charles. Hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Yes, I did.
Your secret mission to wherever you had to go.
Yes. It was globe-trotting around the globe.
The planet Venus is actually where we went, a space trip. So we'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, there were all kinds, we were talking about this before, all kinds of trends and hashtags out on TikTok. We just saw one, hashtag beige flag. I don't know who comes up with this stuff. What is it? It's apparently very popular, by the way, beige flag. It has to do with relationships and how, you know, when some people, they just don't care
right.
for something that their partner is doing, maybe some quirk. But the quirk doesn't rise to the level of a red flag,
right.
which would mean it's time to dump the partner and move on.
Right. I think somehow my wife would be involved in that because she puts up with my quirks. And as far as I know, she hasn't raised it to the level of red flag yet. So maybe we're at beige flag. I don't know. At what point do these trends, though, become harmful? That's the question. Dr. Kelsey Latimer is a clinical psychologist, founder of KML Psychological Services. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So give us an example, because we're talking about when trends become harmful. I definitely want to talk about that. But are there TikTok trends that are not harmful that are, in fact, beneficial?
I think that's an awesome question. And, you know, I think that there's absolutely a positive side to social media. There's no doubt about it. First of all, it's how I got on here today. So I'm really happy about that. And I think it just connects us. So, right. So it gives us an opportunity to be far more connected. outside of people or places that we would normally be able to see before there was the internet. So it's had an awesome opportunity for connection and an impact. My clients tell me that they've had excellent experiences on social media. Oftentimes they've been able to find recovery when they haven't been before. And for those of you that don't know, I'm an addiction and eating disorder specialist. Sure. So I work with people that are seeking recovery, and they may not be able to find it in their local area, but they might be able to find it online. So I think it has pros and it has cons, right. And it really comes down to, you know, how are we using social media?
Right, but here's the thing. Because what I want to do is I want to, for the sake of this discussion, section off TikTok from the rest of social media, because because they're not all the same. Facebook does what it does, and Twitter, now X, does what it does. TikTok has a very special role, it seems, especially for a lot of kids. They see often a lot of dumb things that are on TikTok because it makes good video. By nature, TikTok is something that demands a person's attention because they're short videos. People do things that are outrageous so that it gets the attention on TikTok. So it's somewhat different than sending out a tweet or sending out a like on Facebook. So the question really is not as broad as all social media, which I grant you has many good things, but is there something particularly pernicious, dangerous about TikTok?
I think there absolutely can be. I'm right on board with you in looking at some of the top challenges, if you will, that are out there, and they're incredibly dangerous. And people are trying things that they wouldn't necessarily try if they didn't see that, you know, on TikTok. So I absolutely think that, you know, it's buyer beware. You have to be aware of what you're looking at. And I think parents also need to be aware, because our generation, you know, I'm a Gen X, we may not know about what's happening out there. And I think we need to be aware of what our kids are exposed to. And funny side note, I was talking to somebody this morning, and this had literally nothing to do with this conversation. It was before we decided to meet up here today. And they were telling me that one of their clients talked to them about TikTok specifically being the new Google of their generation. If they want to buy a blanket, they go to TikTok. They go to these different places. So we need to be aware that that may be the main kind of mode of information that's getting out to some people, not all people, but some young people.
All right. Final question, because we are running out of time. And that brings me to my point. TikTok is built around very quick videos, right? And so with all these trends and everything, especially younger people are maybe finding out things about the world through TikTok, but they're not going very deep because there's no time to go deep. It's very quick. So is that a danger to young minds? And can you give us a short attention span answer?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm already bored. Sorry.
Yep, there you go. I think for sure, yes, there is absolutely a challenge with that. We need to be able to go deeper. So, you know, I think that is definitely a problem with today's day and age. I see it all the time in my teaching and in my counseling, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Dr. Kelsey Latimer, clinical psychologist, founder of KML Psychological Services. So did this convince you, Charles, to get on TikTok?
Oh, no, I've already moved on.
You forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing. That's it for KDX In Depth today. Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, welcome back, Charles. Hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Yes, I did.
Your secret mission to wherever you had to go.
Yes. It was globe-trotting around the globe.
The planet Venus is actually where we went, a space trip. So we'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.